Cheers. Henri Goulet.
May it please the court. My name is Dan Freund and I represent John Goulet, a 56-year-old man with a 12-year-old son and a student loan debt that now is in excess of $80,000. The bankruptcy court, the trial court in this case, made a finding of fact that Mr. Goulet could not and would not be able to repay this debt. Now that makes this case different than this court's decision in Roberson, in which the trial court found that Mr. Roberson was going through a rough period in his life, but would be able to repay his $10,000 student loan debt. Unless the panel wishes otherwise, I will let the brief show that the district court erred in substituting its finding of fact on this issue for that of the bankruptcy court. That then would bring us to the question of good faith. Now, the good faith inquiry is interesting because it says, even if you can't repay the student loan debt, even if you never will be able to repay the student loan debt, and even though the statute says even if you can repay, you can still have the debt discharged if it would be an undue hardship to repay it, we're not going to give you a discharge because you're not a good enough person. Well, my first response to this is that Mr. Goulet is a good enough person. He's not the kind of person who graduates from college, has a rough year or two, and then runs to the bankruptcy court and tries to wipe out his student loan. Instead, he's a man who has struggled for years to find gainful employment to, in his words, quote, I knew I had to repay that loan, close quote. So, unless we're going to posit that Mr. Goulet spent the past decade in self-imposed impoverishment in the hope that someday he'd be able to have his student loan debt wiped out in bankruptcy, then I think we have to assume that he is exactly the sort of person that Congress had in mind when it enacted Section 523A8.
Did he make any payments at all during times where he was gainfully employed?
No, and I guess the question is what's gainful employment? The maximum income he had after graduation was $15,000. He would go to the student loan people and say, you know, I've got child support, I've got living expenses, I just can't make the payments, and they agreed with him. You can't make the payments, we're going to defer this, you don't have to pay us. So he was never theoretically in default. But he was not able to actually make the payments.
Is he working now?
As of when I wrote the brief, the last time I checked with him, he was unemployed at that time. Educational credit management tells us that Mr. Goulet is a bad person and shouldn't have his debt discharged because he is responsible for his own circumstances. And I think there are three problems with this approach. The first one is that Section 523A8 is not a punitive statute. To the contrary, the language is designed to prevent undue hardship to student loan borrowers. The second concern is that it leads to absurd results. Two people are in a car, gentleman driving, woman passenger. He makes the choice to drive too fast for conditions on a rainy night. The car hydroplanes and hits a tree. They're both crippled. They're both unable to pay their student loans. She gets a discharge. He doesn't. And I assume that would be, even in the case of Mr. Goulet, if he had a dependent son who could benefit from the income that would be available if he wasn't impoverished by having to pay a student loan that he wasn't able to repay. The third reason to be concerned about this is it opens up the gates to all sorts of interesting questions. What about the choice to father or mother or sire children? If you have five children, therefore you're impoverished because you're trying to provide for them, does that mean you've made a choice and you shouldn't get a discharge of a student loan? Those are the sorts of questions, the Pandora's box we open when we start looking at past good faith, past non-financial decisions, and say, because you made those choices, we're not going to give you a discharge in bankruptcy.
When did he run up these loans?
Early 90s up to mid-90s.
Yeah, we're talking, because a lot of it is reflected upon his age.
Right.
You say, well, he's not some just little guy out of college, but he ran these up when he was 45 years old or something.
That's true.
So it's not ancient history. So he's run up $70,000.
With interest, now more than 80, correct.
That's a lot of money for somebody who's apparently trying to better himself, get degrees, everything else, and then somehow or other decides that he's not able to gainfully use whatever he got with all that money or whatever to gainfully employ himself. So instead, he's living at home with his mother, who pays half of his child support, and he doesn't pay the other half, and he's not working. I understand you can go to to get a deferment, say, okay, you can't pay now, and we'll defer. Maybe that's, but that's not because the loan is 20 years old. It's just a few years old. Now it's getting old, and they say, hey, you did this when you're 45. Now you're 55. Isn't it about time you got a job? And apparently not. I don't know. I'm looking at it. There's two judges that have different opinions below. So we're
right. Well, and not apologize if I don't answer the question you're asking. Cause I'm not
sure. I guess that's a very good question. It's just an observation.
Okay. Well, and there are two ways to respond to that. The first is we can start getting the question of whether the student loan granting setup should be different than it is, whether we should be looking at people's ability to repay in the future, and whether we should be going to someone who's 50 years old or 45 years old and is about to incur $150,000 debt and say, you know, we're not going to lend you the money. Well, that's not before the court today. The system
that isn't the issue.
But,
and, you know, what I'm troubled by is not only does he enroll in school, he does extremely well in school, which shows that he has capacity. And certainly if his loans are reviewed, and I assume his loans were reviewed even as he made them by the institution that he was in school in, you know, he was certainly what I would consider a good gamble, given what his grade points were. You know, so it's clear that he had the capacity to get some employment, some gainful employment.
Well, the two concerns with that, and again, I would suggest this really isn't an issue that 523A raises, but the two responses to that are, number one, he's not such a good gamble. He has felony conviction, drug and alcohol usage, and the second thing is
And I guess I'd say that was all true before he started school.
Right.
And then did so successfully in school. I realize that one success in school doesn't necessarily mean one would be successful in employment.
Right.
But certainly and the district court had to look at all these factors in order to make these findings. That's certainly something the court could take into account.
Right. The bankruptcy court was the trial court and made the findings. The second area of concern is that as he approached graduation, he discovered that in order to be gainfully employed in the field that he was in, he had to do a certain amount of supervised work, and he simply was not going to be able to find that supervised work. And
why? Why? I don't get that. What do you mean supervised work?
And I'm not an expert in this area, but it's an internship of some sort. You have to have a certain number, to be the licensing process, you have to have a certain number of hours working with another, with a social worker or a therapist, in order to have the state say, all right, you're free, you can go out on your own. It's somewhat like the law was 40 or 50 years ago.
You can't find somebody that you work with in this field? Is it the field just closed up where there isn't anybody that you can associate with in order to do this, internship or whatever you call it?
I suspect that if you did it for free...
One way to pay off $70,000.
Well,
instead of living at home, but for free.
The question is, where do you... So he incurs more debt going to school. Then he falls further behind while he does this free training, and I'm not sure how he supports himself at that time. I mean, he does have minimal employment after his postgraduate years, so he is supporting something. We can speculate about this, and I think that's the concern we have, is when we start getting into do you have an illness? Do you have a weak personality? Are you someone who is sloughing off, and that the Congress has not asked the courts to make that sort of decision. It says, can you pay this loan going forward? You're 56 years old. Can you find employment and pay $80,000 over the rest of your employable life? And you know, we can all say he should buck up and get a job, and maybe he could make some payment, but the statute doesn't say can you make some payment. It says can you pay.
Does he have an expectation of income, say, through inheritance?
It's not really in the record, but it's minimal. I guess I'm going beyond the record now.
Well, he went to Regis College at some point, which is a private institution.
Right. I don't know how that was funded, whether he was a scholarship student or whether someone paid, or that might have been a time when he had some income and could pay. The bottom line is that Mr. Goulet has tried within what the court has obviously recognized are his very limited capabilities, and he has simply not been able to and will not be able to repay his full $80,000 plus in student loan debt. The reality of affirming the district court decision would be to sentence him to a life without any realistic hope or possibility of being out from underneath the hardship of a debt that he simply can't pay. Accordingly, we ask that the district court decision be reversed and the Banksy court's findings and judgment be reinstated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ganger?
Good morning. My name is Jeff Gettinger. I represent Educational Credit Management Corporation, which is a nonprofit organization that administers student guaranteed student loans. Contrary to what Mr. Freund said, this is not a good versus bad issue. This is an issue of how much effort on the good faith part of Mr. Goulet that he has made to repay his loans. As the court has already observed, in his mid-40s, he made the market decision that he was going to go back to school and try to obtain his master's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Stout. He incurred significant loans to get that education. He, for whatever reason, did not complete that education, did not get his master's degree. That was a voluntary choice on his part. As the court has already observed, he did very well in school. I believe he had a 3.8 grade point average in the coursework. He testified in the bankruptcy court that all he had to do was complete a statistical analysis part of his thesis and complete his thesis, and he would have gotten his master's degree. For some reason, he chose not to do so. Mr. Goulet, as his coursework indicated, and as the bankruptcy judge commented, is a very bright person. Mr. Goulet simply lacks the motivation that is needed to accomplish his goals. Roberson is the law in this circuit. He failed to prove the second and third prongs of that test. He failed to prove that his dire financial condition is likely to exist for a significant portion of the repayment period, and he failed to show that he moved or that he acted in good faith. As the court already observed, he never made a payment on any of these student loans. He continually obtained deferments from the student loan agency that had the loans at that time until those ran out, and as soon as those ran out, he filed this bankruptcy proceeding. He has not made any effort of any sort to repay these loans. Implicit in the good faith requirement of the third prong of the Roberson test is that he maximizes income and minimizes his expenses and at least makes some effort to repay these student loans. He never did it. In the trial court case, he repeatedly referred to problems that he had back in the 1980s, various other problems he had since that time, but he never showed through any sort of medical evidence that he had any sort of disability that would keep him from getting any productive job.
If we would affirm, what's your remedy under the circumstances?
Remedy is that the loan remains enforceable.
I mean, that's about it, right?
Yes, sir.
Because he has no income, he's living with his mother, and he's not paying child support.
That's correct, but at that point, our loan is still enforceable.
And let me just ask you, I don't know that this would ever happen, but should he, if this were affirmed, the district court judgment was affirmed, and he then got some employment and attempted to pay back the loans, would there be any flexibility in terms of a payment schedule?
Yes, there's all sorts of flexibility in the collection of student loans. There's a program called the William Ford Program that any student loan person can apply for that takes into account their current income, takes into account their expenses, and takes into account the poverty level currently in place, the federal poverty level at that time, and provides that he can make whatever payments that he can make over and above what he can keep for the poverty level, and that goes on for 20 years. And if whatever is left over after that 20 years is then automatically discharged. They have other flexible programs, but that's perhaps the most flexible program. The bankruptcy court erred in finding that Mr. Goulet, could not meet the second prong of the test based on his past history, based on his inability to make payments to date. That isn't the way Roberson works. Roberson looks at the current situation and looks at what the situation is going to be during the repayment period and see if it's possible for him to make payments during that time period. Roberson does not look back and use the lack of payments in the past as the basis for saying that he can't make the payments in the future. I would ask that the court affirm the findings of the district court. This situation that Mr. Goulet finds himself in is self-imposed, and as such, he failed to make the Roberson test. Are there any questions? I'm
okay, thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement. Court will be in recess until, I believe, next Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Thank you.